Looking at eating disorders. Do you know that 81% of 10-year-olds are worried about being fat? In today's world, everybody's worried about being fat, but eating disorders affect more girls than boys. So today we're going to talk about eating disorders from the point of view of raising daughters. However, be aware that many boys do have anorexia or bulimia. So while we're talking about girls, keep in mind that this could apply to your son as well, and just that we're going to use the pronoun she in today's discussion because it is much more common in the female gender, but it does exist in boys as well. The desire to be skinny comes from many sources. Partly, it's cultural and social. So, for example, what we see in the media does train our eyes to look at a certain ideal body image, and even young children can see that the skinny girls are the ones that on the magazine covers and in the movies and everywhere else, and they want to be like that. The sports activities that some kids do, like ballet, dancing, gymnastics, those activities actually emphasize the need for a very skinny body, and they can contribute to eating disorders, just actually as wrestling can contribute to eating disorders in boys and young men. Any activity which focuses on the thin, lean, strong body may get distorted if there are other factors are in place. One of the main factors for whether somebody will develop an eating disorder is a genetic factor. The tendency actually runs in family trees, so that people who do have a relative with an eating disorder have a higher incidence of having eating disorders themselves. So there's something going on there with the genes, although it has not been exactly pinpointed what it is, but it does run in families. And there are psychological factors that are also partly genetic, and maybe largely genetic, actually, because people with eating disorders often have other psychological disorders as well, such as anxiety or obsessive-compulsive disorder. So, and then the eating disorders are highly associated with depression as well. So, although depression may be a result sometimes of the metabolism that results from eating disorders such as anorexia and bulimia, depression can also exist before the eating disorder starts. But it's just interesting that obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD, you know, is highly comorbid. That is, it exists a lot along with anorexia or bulimia, and other anxiety disorders do as well. So there again, there's something physical going on there. It's not all emotional, you know, but it may be triggered by stress in the home, family issues. So the whatever a person's genes lead them to can be triggered by stress. So you have to have something in the genes that leads you to an eating disorder. But if the stress is sufficiently well regulated, then you may never manifest that eating disorder, or you may learn how to control that eating disorder. Family stress is sometimes linked to it, but sometimes it's also the family patterns of addiction, which also is a poorly understood phenomenon, but it just has been noted that in families where there's alcohol abuse and drug abuse, there also seems to be a higher incidence of eating disorders. So I don't know if it's because of the stress of those things or because there's a correlation in the brain for addictive processes. Like you can be addicted to food, you can be addicted to starving yourself, you can be addicted to substances. So there may be something going on there as well. Well, all of these factors are complex, and we can't just point to a bad mother, for example, as being the cause of her daughter's eating disorder. So if you happen to be the parent of a child with an eating disorder, just drop that guilt, you know, pronto vito, because it's not your fault. Okay, so it's not your fault if your child has migraine headaches or back problems or stomach distress, and it's not your fault if the child manifests her stress in terms of eating disorders. See, we all do manifest our stress somehow, and it really depends on our genes. So when we're dealing with life, some of us will overeat our way towards life, you know, through life, and some of us will get headaches a lot, and some of us will always be down with the cold and the flu and, you know, various bodily aches and pains and so on. And just the way our body and mind handle the stress really depends hugely on our genetic inheritance. So anorexia and bulimia are kind of like that. Same thing with the anxiety and the OCD. You can't bring that out in your child either. It's not through bad parenting that these things happen. It's through the genes and the interaction with the stress in the environment. So certainly as a parent, you can do your part, which is reduce the stress in the environment by doing the best kind of parenting you can. That won't cure everything, however. Just, you know, that's your part, right? The child has other stresses like school pressures and social pressures of his or her own that she has to take care of. So, you know, you can't really make it all go away, but you can reduce family stress by making sure that your home is not a yelling field, you know, and that you're using the 80-20 rule for young children or the 90-10 rule for older kids, which we've spoken about on previous podcasts here. But it's the matter of being warm and pleasant and loving and good feeling to your child 80% of the time if that child is 12 years old or younger, and 90% of the time if you're talking to a teenager, just because teenagers have less tolerance for the negativity. And the negativity includes all your instructions and all of your threats and your punishments and your own bad mood and saying no and disagreeing and showing any sign of irritation or impatience or anger. Like, you know, there's a lot of negatives that parents can do, being critical, complaining, lecturing. Well, all that stuff has to be very minimal. Otherwise, the child's stress gets rather high. So, you know, you want to be a good listener and a loving, patient and compassionate parent as much as possible so that your child's stress won't really be coming from you. And that is not to say that you can save the child the pain of living, but you just, you know, don't want to be part of that. Another thing you can do to help the child not have to turn to self-comfort, which in an odd way they get from eating disorders, is to keep communication about feelings open in your house. So talk about feelings, your feelings, and your child's feelings. Try to name feelings as they happen. In most homes, the naming of feelings really doesn't happen. Rather, the emphasis is on the solving of problems. So, for example, if the kid comes to the cookie jar and finds that his last cookie that he was looking forward to is not there, somebody else ate it, and the kid starts screaming, very often a parent will go into problem-solving mode and say something like, okay, I'll get you cookies this afternoon, just quiet down, don't yell, it's not that important, blah, blah, blah. And the whole discussion of the child's inner world, the child's feelings, is omitted because maybe to a parent, you know, it's not that important. Who cares about the parent might say, don't make a mountain out of a molehill here. It's not a crucial issue. But really, it's an opportunity for a parent to keep going in and in and into the child's inner experience by naming all the feelings associated with these small non-issues. So how hard is it for the parent to just say, oh gosh, that's disappointing. You wanted that cookie and it's not there. How frustrating. Oh, I hate that when that happens. You know, and the parent then has few words of an emotional nature that they've offered the child: disappointing, frustrating, hating when it happens, and that's all you need, you know, over the little tiny issues as you're raising a child, always naming the child's feelings just before you solve the problem. Then you can go on to say, well, honey, I'll go shopping this afternoon and get you some, you know. So it's not to say you can't solve the problem, but just before you solve it, name those feelings for everything that's going on. And again, that's no guarantee that a child will not develop problems of their own of many kinds, but it's one thing that you can do as a parent to just help, you know. And you can talk about your own feelings, as I said, about feeling worried about something or frightened about something or hurt or sad or irritated or upset. And just have that feeling vocabulary going on to show your child that these are the words. The feelings actually make the words make the feeling shrink, that they act as a container for the feeling. And it also shows the child that this side of life, the grumpy, disappointed, miserable, whatever side of life, is normal. It's part of life. It's not the whole story. And you're real. You have those feelings. And the child can be real with her feelings as well. So, you know, that's one thing you can do. Another thing you can do as a parent is not to model distorted attitudes towards food and body image. Or let's put it in the positive way, shall we? That one thing you can do is actually to model healthy attitudes towards body image and towards food. So you're not yourself walking around saying, oh, I'm so fat, I'm so fat. I mean, I know women have a tendency to do this, but, you know, show some pride in the way you look. Like, you know, be happy and show your pleasure in your own body. Do it out loud sometimes for your child. And be generous with your attitude towards other people. You know, some parents sit and mumble things about other people, like, oh, can you believe how she looks in that dress? Or, boy, you know, that's so unflattering. Look how fat she is. Or, oh, I can't believe some people wear those things with their body hanging out like that. You know, they say all kinds of critical things that indicate that they are repulsed or disgusted by other people's bodies. And really, that's one thing that a parent does not have to do. Okay? Just keep those little thoughts to yourself. And if you want to say something about other people and the way they look, make it complimentary. Didn't she look lovely in that? Isn't that a great color for her? Oh, doesn't that fashion, you know, bring out the best in her, whatever? Like, you know, look for the good and comment on that. And don't relegate those comments to skinny little model type people, right? Make generous, positive remarks about other people that your child can hear. So, you know, people with all kinds of interesting body shapes, because let's face it, okay, the human body comes in lots of different shapes and sizes, and really it's only those very, very few who have that little stick figure that the models all, you know, want. But that's not real life, and that's not what we want our children to aim towards. So being positive about the human body is another gift that you can give your kids. Well, how would you know if your kids were running into difficulty and, you know, that there was perhaps an eating disorder or something going on? Now, there are some signs and symptoms. Let's look at anorexia to begin with. First of all, with anorexia, there is a weight loss issue. So if your child was a certain weight, whether that was overweight or normal weight, but in a rather short time loses about 15% of that weight. You know, they're going to do this because they went on a diet, right? But the diet was really fast instead of taking, you know, 6 months to occur like that. And doesn't seem to end. So the child all of a sudden becomes very food conscious. And maybe if the child was overweight at the beginning of this, you're even happy that she's becoming food conscious. And you don't quite notice that things are getting out of control. For example, she seems to be skipping meals or just not eating or playing with that, the food that's on her plate, sort of cutting it into little tiny pieces and pushing those pieces around. And then you don't really notice what happens because, you know, you're not sitting there watching a particular child eat. But, you know, you can see this playing with her food thing and not seeming to really jump in and just eat. And perhaps the child, especially if it's a teenager, starts asking specifically for low-fat types of foods, just let the vegetables, and the kid starts reading all kinds of labels and actually acts worried about the calories or the fat content of food, starts asking questions about that. That, again, may be part of the diet, but if it doesn't calm down or go away, can be part of the obsession, and anorexia is really an obsession with gaining, the obsessional fear, let's put it that way, of gaining weight. You might even find that your child is beginning to lie about whether she ate or how much she ate. She's looking at herself in the mirror quite a lot, or she's beginning to wear lots of layers of clothing or baggy clothes, partly to keep warm, because when a child really has anorexia, they start to have a lowered body temperature and they're cold. And also because of the weight loss, that is an unhealthy weight loss for the body, other things are happening to them. For a teenager, their periods will stop, and maybe the child stops asking you to go shopping for her sanitary products. You might notice that. Or the child becomes moody, irritable, can't concentrate. Now, those kinds of symptoms we always chalk up to hormones or just being a teenager or just being a kid or a person. But if it was unusual for your child, if she was happier before and she's becoming crabby now, that could be part of the problem here. And the child may, her hair and skin may change a bit, so that sometimes because of anorexia you have drier skin and hair. And even if there's a fine growth of hair that kind of covers the body in more advanced cases of anorexia, it's like a little fuzzy type of thing, and that's really not a good sign. A child can feel faint or dizzy from eating disorders, so if that's going on, you know, all of this is reason for concern. And anorexia is basically a disease of not eating enough, really. It's just... it may be accompanied by excessive exercising to try and unload calories, or excessive use of laxatives or water pills or diet pills even, which you might find little packages of that somehow in your house, and that would also be not a good sign. So those are some of the things that you can look out for. And bulimia has some similar features. For example, the use of laxatives, water pills, that can be a problem in the purging, type of bulimia, where bulimia actually is an overeating, binge food addiction. So in the child who has bulimia can actually be overweight or a normal weight. They're not necessarily underweight at all. But what happens to them is they have an addictive urge to eat too much food, and then an equally addictive urge to get rid of the calories that were consumed by doing something. So that something can be vomiting or using a laxative or an enema to purge food from the body. Or there's the non-purging type of bulimia where the person fasts. They go on a fast after, just stop eating for a long time, or they exercise excessively to get rid of those calories. And so if you see odd behaviors like that happening, combined with the other problems that we saw in anorexia, such as the dry hair and so on, sometimes discolored or calloused finger joints, sometimes because of using the fingers to push down the throat to induce vomiting, can sometimes damage the outer surface of the hand. And the teeth and gums may have problems from vomiting, and there can be, because of that vomiting, also stomach pain, intestinal problems like constipation and diarrhea, also those irregular or sometimes non-existent menstrual periods. There can also be weird-looking behaviors around food, because the person has to have time to eat a lot of food and then time to get rid of that food. So there can be mysterious trips to the bathroom after meals. Sometimes you actually hear a person vomiting, or you see traces of vomit or smells of vomit or something. Or the person seems to go out for long walks at night or something, or just leaves after eating for long periods, and you don't know where they're going or what they're doing. That can be, one of the signs. And sometimes avoiding eating with other people, because now they may be in their fasting stage or something, because they're skipping meals because they had too much before. They're having too much water, or some kids will find that diet soda helps them vomit more easily, so they'll get into that. And like anorexics, they may also play with their food or chew a long time or separate food on the plate and just do funny things with it. And also something to look at is a child who seems to eat an awful, you know, a large amount of food, but does not lose weight, you know, because that's a sign that, you know, that is one of the symptoms of bulimia. So they're not, they're eating a lot but not getting fat. And how did that happen? Well, you know, they had to do something about that. So those are some of the symptoms that you might look for there. What can be done if you think your child has an eating disorder? Well, first of all, don't panic, right? Things develop slowly, and even though a long-term eating disorder can certainly be life-threatening, that doesn't happen overnight. It takes a while. So when you start to notice funny things happening with food, you know, you can stay fairly relaxed and calm and express your concerns to the child in terms of your own feelings, as in, I feel concerned because I see that you're doing such and such, and that makes me feel nervous. Okay, putting it that way, we call those I messages instead of you messages. Like, you know what, I think you might have an eating disorder. Because, you know, one of the features of eating disorders, just like the addictive disorders in general, is that the sufferer is usually in extreme denial. Something goes on there with the brain, and it's very difficult for a person to say, yes, yes, I do have a problem, please help me. Okay, that's the least likely response you're going to get when you confront a child, even with an I message. So you've got to go very slowly and carefully, and to say, you know, I am concerned, and perhaps I'm concerned for no reason at all. So what I'd like us to do is go visit Dr. So-and-so, and he can put my mind to rest. We'll have an interview with him, and if he thinks that I shouldn't be concerned, then I will stop being concerned, right? So you kind of almost make it like your problem, so the child might go along and humor you. You know, now, we try it the nice way first, but if you've really got a very serious concern, like your child is already into the deeper stages of this thing, you know, you might have to get a little bit firmer. No, we are going to the doctor. It is not optional, okay? I've, you know, made the appointment. Mom and Dad, we're all coming together. The whole family's going to carry you if necessary. You know, you are going. You know, you don't want to make this optional, although you start off nicely to make it hopefully appealing enough to the child that she will voluntarily just, yes, agree to come with you. But if she doesn't agree to come with you, you still have to get her to an assessment. And the treatment for anorexia and bulimia usually involves several professionals. There might be a medical person who does the original assessment and referrals, a nutritional counselor of some kind, a dietitian, a nutritionist, whatever, to help the child learn what she should be eating and stay to that eating regime, and a psychotherapist of some kind to help the child manage her stress in ways that don't resort to eating, disordered eating. So, you know, the main thing is how to get that process going, that first visit to the doctor and the follow-up. And you can start off nicely and hope for cooperation, especially if you have got a decent relationship with the child. Again, following that 80-20 or 90-10 rule will definitely help you have that good enough relationship that maybe the child will just be cooperative when she sees how concerned you are. But if the child is not cooperative or thinks you're ridiculous, again, you can just have the child humor you. Say, okay, I'm ridiculous, I'm stupid, let's have Dr. So-and-so tell me how stupid I am, and then we'll go home, you know. So, and then if it's not that pleasant, you'll have to just use backup people, other people who, you know, more than just one person to get your child to that assessment. You can call the doctor too and ask what sort of procedures the doctor recommends for getting an assessment done. So hopefully, you know, your children will be healthy eaters all the way through life, but there are a certain number of kids who will go this route, and they just need your help, your intervention, your love, just as they would need it for any other kind of illness. You don't want to take your child's eating disorder, if they have one, personally, because it is not personal to you, okay? This is a child's way of handling stress, as we said right at the beginning, and your job is just to be helpful towards helping the child solve that problem.